sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you a series of vivid programs dramatizing the inner meanings of Negro life, based on the prize-winning bestseller, New World A-Coming, by Roy Ottley, featuring Canada Lee as narrator.
As the war moves to a crucial climax, the enemy is bringing up every desperate and poisonous weapon. Most desperate and most effective is the ancient weapon that divides, that sets friend against friend, brother against brother, that sets a nation against itself. Race discrimination. Through the years, it has been the greatest obstacle to progress in the United States. Today, as the offensive of the United Nations gathers strength for a gigantic assault on Hitler's European fortress, the outbreak of racial strife would almost be fatal to our war effort, and perhaps even breed fascism at home. Racial conflict must be avoided at all costs. So today, we tell you the true story of James Pearson, a trade unionist, who, having learned about the deeper meanings of democracy through his experiences in the labor movement, is now contributing his part to prevent any occurrence of racial conflict.
I'm James Pearson. I'm a member of the United Automobile Workers of America, CIO Union. Until very recently, I guess I was like most white guys in my shop, more or less indifferent about Negroes and their rights. Of course, I'd heard the union organizer at meetings talking about Negro rights, but I used to think he was talking through his hat. I didn't realize that what happened to Negroes is important to me, to my family, and to the place we live in. The war started me thinking, though. After all, a Negro's a worker like me. What's bad for him is bad for me. Well, that's getting ahead of my story. I was born in a sort of a one-horse town in Wisconsin. I was 14 before I'd ever been to a big city. That was when I went to Milwaukee once with my father.
Dad, look at that man.
Where?
That colored man over there.
What about him?
What's he doing here?
Oh, I suppose he lives here.
Boy, I thought all Negroes lived in the South.
Don, you know better than that.
Well, I never saw one before.
By golly, come to think of it, I guess you haven't. I haven't seen one around our town for years.
Are there many Negroes here in Milwaukee?
Son, there are thousands of Negroes living in and around all the big cities in the North.
What kind of work do they do?
Oh, porter work, odd job, cleaning up and such things.
Is that all they do?
Yep, not much else.
After that trip to Milwaukee, I used to talk about Negroes with some people. But all I heard was that they were mostly a shiftless, lazy, unclean group of people doing the drudgery of the world. Well, naturally, I took these comments for granted. You know how people are. They pretty much believe what they hear. Never bother to find out for themselves. Well, it never occurred to me to inquire into the subject until, like I say, a few months ago when something happened at my shop in Detroit. One day, Joe, he's my pal, he says to me,
Jim, you hear the latest?
Hear what?
About them six women.
What women?
Those Negro women is coming here to work.
To work on these drill presses?
That's what they say. I heard a company didn't want to hire him, but some committee in Washington forced the boss to put him to work.
Well, what's all the beefing about?
Well, wait till old Gepi hears about it. You know how he feels about Negroes. He'll raise the devil.
Nobody seemed to mind the news. Didn't seem to matter much one way or the other to most of us. The drill presses were standing idle on our shift, and workers were needed. That was that. But sometimes you don't always know what's deep down in you. Maybe it's just easier to follow the crowd, or maybe to follow the noisiest guy. Well, Gimpy, he's our foreman, was one of those kind of guys. I'd seen him horse guys into the dumbest arguments. Well, later that day, I began to notice something happening.
Time to knock off the lunch, man.
Hey, Joe. My old lady made me a chicken sandwich. Want a piece?
No. I got more than I can eat now. Maybe Tom wants.
No, not me.
Give me a slug of your beer, Jim, huh?
Yeah,
here he comes,
sure.
Old Gimpy. Watch what you say when he's around.
Hey, you guys. Have you heard about them Negroes who's coming to work in your department?
Yeah, we heard
about
them. What about it?
Well, if you ask me, I say it ain't right.
Oh, nobody's going to lose their job.
Yeah? Well, if they get away with this, pretty soon there won't be no jobs for white men.
They wouldn't do that.
And what's more, they're dirty and diseased, too. Why, we could catch anything from them.
Well, doesn't the company give everybody it takes on a complete physical examination and a blood test?
Yeah, those girls must be okay, then.
Oh, Gimpy, you're nuts.
Nuts, huh? Well, you'll see. Why, if you give them an inch, they'll walk all over you.
Maybe Gimpy's got something there. Let's listen to him.
Yeah, before you know it, they'll be thinking they're as good as you are.
Sure, I say let's protest.
Yeah, come on, let's get rid of
them. Some of the things Gimpy said I wouldn't repeat. They were pretty nasty. A lot of guys who had come up from the South joined in with him. But from what I could see, most of the men wanted to have no part of the argument. A few noisy guys in a shop can raise Cain. Well, soon I found myself mixed up in the argument. And Joe, just to quiet things down, was ready to go along with any suggestion anybody had to prevent those Negro girls from going to work. And a strong sentiment grew up for a protest if the company went through with its plans on Monday when the girls were due to go to work. Joe said that was the one way to stop the argument, get back to work. That was the dumbest thing we ever did in our lives. You see, bright and early that Monday, the shop was like an armed camp. Scarcely anybody got out his work. Guys just stood around arguing. The very air was loaded with suspicion and tenseness. It didn't make sense to me then, but I understand better now why two or three times Gimpy went by muttering,
"You guys know what you're to do when those Negro girls come in here."
He was starting up mob hysteria. Well, about 10 o'clock, in came Mr. Gardner from the personnel office with the six girls. To tell the truth, I must admit they were pretty nice looking. Even though prejudice had been whipped to a pitch, every one of us couldn't help feeling ashamed after what followed. Mr. Gardner began introducing the girls to Gimpy.
"Ladies, this is your foreman, Mr. Thompson. This is Mrs. Williams, Miss Maxwell, and this is Mrs. Jackson."
"Pleased to meet you, Mr. Thompson."
"Hey, give me that tomato out of your box."
"You ain't gonna throw it at him."
"I ain't. Watch this." I believe I was as shocked as the girls when Gimpy's boy started throwing things at him. This business might have become something big if the union delegate wasn't in the plant and hurried in to see what the mix-up was about. As he pushed through the crowd, two men followed him.
"Let me through here.
Hey, that's Pat from the union."
"Hey, who are those guys with
him?" "Now, quiet. Now, listen, men. I want you to hear Mr. Kennedy from the United States Employment Service. Mr. Kennedy,
I'm going to make this brief. I have here President Roosevelt's executive order number 8802. Now, let me read one passage to you. I do hereby reaffirm the policy of the United States that there shall be no discrimination in the employment of workers in defense industries or government because of race, creed, or color.
Now, wait a minute. You've heard from the President of the United States. Now, men, listen to me. We're all members of the CIO. Our union stands for unity among workers, regardless of race, creed, or color. When you signed up with the union, you accepted the Constitution. Your eyes were wide open. No one forced you to join. Now, if you stop working, this will be a hate strike. This action is completely out of line. Negroes are dying this very minute alongside white Americans on the battlefield. Bullets don't discriminate. And neither does the CIO. Now, either these girls work unmolested here, or every man and woman who interferes with their right to work forfeits the protection of the union. Wait a minute, men. Wait a minute. I want you to hear Colonel Fletcher from the War Department. He's here and he has a word to say.
Men, I'm not going to waste your time with nonsense. This is the situation. The world is looking at you this very minute. Hitler would laugh himself silly if he could see how white American workers are refusing to work with Negroes. Fellow Americans. This kind of thing is right up Hitler's alley. You know the FBI has traced similar hate strikes and other plants straight to the door of Hitler's hidden agents in this country. Now, I don't know who started this, but it looks awful fishy to me. What's more, the United States Army is interested in production. We need workers and we need them fast. Those idle drill presses are helping the enemy. The Army's position is this. Either work peacefully with these Negro girls or ring your cards out and quit.
I just want to say for the boys, that's what I call talking turkey. We get the point and where we're the union. And back to work we go. And if anyone tries to stop us, we'll break his back. Come on.
Yeah.
Hey, come on.
Nobody asked for his time card or quit. We all went back to our jobs. And the girls went to work on the drill presses. The situation was uncomfortable for a few days. But now we're getting along swell. The girls are in the union. One of them, a pretty good artist, is making posters for the blood donor campaign. Well, now, I might have forgotten the whole thing if I hadn't come across a news item buried away in the back of a newspaper a couple of months later. Came from Washington. I got it right here. It says, the Office of War Information today revealed that in proportion to the total population, there are more Negroes than whites in the armed services. 10.6% of the Negro people are in uniform, as against 9% of white Americans. Well, those figures pulled me up short, because you never think about such things. Well, it occurred to me that the Negro problem would disappear if more white workers knew more about Negroes. So I set out to learn what I could. A few days later, I was talking to Anderson while riding in the elevator. He's our elevator man. Been in the plant for 15 years. And it just occurred to me he had never been upgraded. I'd never said much to him before. But I felt like talking in the elevator there, so I told him about what I read in the paper.
Yeah. Negroes are doing a powerful lot of fighting in this war.
Well, you don't see much about it in the papers, though.
Yeah, it's just the trouble. We Negroes have fought in every war.
Yeah?
Yeah. We've never got much credit for it. From 1776 up to now. See, did you know that the first man to lose his life in the Revolutionary War was a Negro? Yeah. And his name was Crispus Attucks. They built a bronze monument to him in Boston. Right on the commons, too.
funny how little you know about people and how much you can find out if you just ask around. You know, the CIO provides us with a lot of pamphlets and books and newspapers for reading. And, well, you get to know some things, but they never mean much unless they touch you personally. I guess the real turning point in my attitude towards Negroes was still to come. Although at the time, I didn't know it. One night after work, Joe and I went across the street to have a beer at the tavern. He kept putting nickels in the jukebox, playing one record over and over again.
That's a swell number. First on this week's hit parade.
Joe, you play that over once more, you're going to drive me nuts.
Oh, what's the matter with you? Don't you like good music?
Yeah, I like it, but does it have to be played so often?
Oh, nuts to you.
Okay,
I like it.
Okay.
Jim.
Yeah?
Trent, the union organizer, was around to talk with me today.
What did he say? Anything special?
Oh, just something about wanting me to go to that meeting tonight. Said you was gone.
Yeah, I'm gone.
What's it all about? I didn't get the whole story.
Well, they're talking about forming a committee against racial discrimination in the shop. You know, those Negro girls got a raw deal when they first came in the shop. The union wants to make sure it won't happen again.
Well, I can't make it.
Why not?
Well, you know how the wife is. She says I'm wasting enough time at the union headquarters.
You belong at the meeting tonight, Joe. All of us ought to be there. It's important.
Well, what's the matter all of a sudden you're so hot all about all this stuff, huh?
You know, Joe, I've been doing a lot of thinking. I see this thing much different than I did at this time last year.
How'd I get along without you and me at the meeting? They don't need us to decide things like that for them.
That's where you're wrong, if you ask me.
Wait a second. Ah, isn't that music, eh? Hot stuff, eh?
Joe, there's a lot of hot stuff going on in the shop.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Gimpy and his gang are going to be there tonight. You know what that means. They'll try to break things up. Now, I know you ain't on their side. That's good enough reason for you to be there.
Well, what's Gimpy doing at that meeting? The foreman ain't supposed to be at a union get-together.
Yeah, well, that's just it. The union wants the whole plant in on it. Bosses, foremen, and the workers.
Well, that's only inviting trouble. Well, if you're gone, I'll tag along.
Drink up, then. Let's shove off. When we got to the meeting, the hall was packed. Lots of people were there, about 800. Sure enough, Gimpy was on his feet, shooting off his mouth.
And the first thing you know, Negroes will be taking over all your jobs. Now you ask me to tell you what I thought. You said this is a meeting where anybody could say anything, what he likes. Well, I'm telling you, what I said is going to hurt some people, yeah. But I give it to you straight. I was once a worker on the machine myself. And if I was in your union, I would cut out all this mixing of whites and blacks. And that ain't going to be so good for you after the war, either. Remember that. We got white boys coming back. Brother Chairman. Brother Chairman!
I'm Jim Pearson. You all know me.
Sit down.
Sorry I got here a little late tonight, but I heard enough of what Gimpy had to say to get the drift of his argument.
Sit down!
You know, there was a time when I never would get up on the floor to speak. I ain't much good at that kind of thing. So you'll have to forgive me if I ain't no speaker. Now, let me give you this straight from the shoulder. Mrs. Williams, the Negro woman who came into work at our shop 6 months ago, took over the drill press right opposite me. Now, that machine stood idle for months before she came. Now, when she got to work on that machine, I was in a good spot to see what she did. Now, let me tell you, Mrs. Williams kept her head and eyes glued to that machine. And no stalling, either. All right, here's the point. Mrs. Williams is in the audience. I see her back there, two rows from the end. Will you stand up, Mrs. Williams? I wonder how many people here who feel like Gimpy does ever took the trouble to look at her coat, at the lapel of her coat. If you didn't, I'll tell you what's there. She's wearing a service bar. And you know how many stars there are on it? 3 stars. Don't hear her talking much about that. She's too busy turning out the stuff. How many of you have got three boys in the service? Will you raise your hands? Don't be scared. Raise your hands. Ah, here's one. What's your name, buddy?
Michelson.
Thanks for getting up, Mike. Keep standing, please. I only got one brother in the service. And most of you have one or two sons or relatives in uniform. Well, when Uncle Sam gives a call to fight for all of us, he doesn't care what color skin you got. He just wants to know if you're an American. And if you're an American, that's good enough for him, white or black. Now, Mike, you and Mrs. Williams, I think, are the two most important people in this hall. I want to know your opinion. What do you think? Do you think Negroes have a right to jobs the same as whites? Answer truthfully. Go ahead, speak up.
Well, I don't see why not. If you can do the job, that's what counts. And all the rest of this monkey business ought to stop right here and now.
You're right, you're right.
Thanks, Mike. Them's my sentiments, too. Now, one more thing I got to say, and then I'm through. I'm going to mention a few names. Gimpy and a little clique that's around him is getting orders from somewhere. I don't know from where, but they're un-American and they're lousy.
Will the secretary read the resolution?
We, the people of all races, citizens of the United States of America, declare ourselves wholeheartedly behind the effort of the government to prosecute the war to an ultimate victory. We firmly oppose any form of racial discrimination on the job or anywhere else. We believe in the fundamental principle that full participation of all citizens is fair, just, and necessary if we are to win the victory and an enduring peace.
Not many days ago, I was appointed to the interracial committee of my local union. And I'm having a wonderful time. Incidentally, we don't have a race problem now at my shop. A good many more Negroes have come into the shop. We're getting along swell. Even the company, which has seen for itself that whites and Negroes can and do work together, has come around. Oh, I nearly forgot. Mrs. Williams is now a shop steward. She was elected unanimously by her department, which now includes 273 white and 38 colored workers. I think this is progress. Don't you?
You've been listening to New World is Coming, the 12th in a series of programs devoted to the Negro's role in American life. Starring in today's broadcast was Joseph Julian as Jim Pearson and Canada Lee as narrator. Others in the cast included Ralph Bell as Joe, Martin Wolfson as Trent, the union organizer, Randolph Eccles as Colonel Fletcher, Norman Rose as Michelson, Michael Everett as Tom, Sandy Bickard as Gimpy, Betty Burghardt as Mrs. Williams, and Eric Roberts as young Jim Pearson. We invite you to be with us again next Sunday at 3:03 for another dramatization of New World a Coming, written by Roy Otley. The program is produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson, John Velasco assisted. Music was conducted by William Wirges. The theme song was composed by Duke Ellington. Your announcer, Bob Harris. This was a public service feature of WMCA. This is America's leading independent station.